Backchat Studios is a part of the Acast Creator Network. Head to backchatpodcast.com.au to sign up as a patron and access all of our merch.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You cannot stop him. You can only hope to contain
him. The Backchat Basketball Show back again. Hello at backchatpodcast.com.au to send us an email, or backchat_basketball. On Instagram. Follow us there, see what we're up to. If you're not already doing this, have a look on YouTube. We actually put our episodes up there as well, so you can go and subscribe there. It just lives on the Backchat Studios YouTube page. You also find Fat Chat, which is another podcast in the network, and the host of Fat Chat is Jared, and today he's speaking with Rhys Vaig. Now, it's a little different on the Backchat Basketball Show today because usually I'm interviewing the guests, but we both wanted to speak to Rhys, Jared and I, and we thought, let's just make him do the one interview instead of being on both our podcasts. So I thought I'll just steal their interview and we'll play it on our feed today for the Backchat Basketball Show. It's a lot of basketball chat. It's great. Jared's a great host as well. Asks a lot of good questions. Rhys has got some elite stories. He's a four-time champion at the Perth Wildcats. Played in Japan. Now just signed a new deal to play at the South East Melbourne Phoenix. So he's back in Australia. It's a really good chat. Enjoy it. And I'll be back next week and we'll probably talk NBA Finals. It's probably going to be Heat v Nuggets. Huge.
Welcome back to Fat Chat by Body Magic. Now, the guest I've got today, he's a mate from way back. I'm so excited to have him on for the podcast episode today. He's a four-time NBL championship player with the Perth Wildcats. He's a Boomer superstar. He's just got back from playing in the B-League in Japan, and he's just signed a two-year deal with the South East Melbourne Phoenix in the NBL. Mate, great to see you. Please, everybody, Rhys Vaig, welcome to the show, Rhysy.
What an intro. That was unreal.
Yeah, mate. Really good about myself. So good to see you. We were sort of like, you know, talking 10 minutes before we got on here, and I was going, save all this good chat, but we actually get on the podcast. But man, good to see you. What's been going on?
Good to see you too, mate. Yeah, this is our first official chat since I've been back, so we've got a lot to cover.
Absolutely. How was the rest of Japan? Just got back.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. Like, great experience. 3 years there, so... kind of, I think it was time to come back, totally. But definitely going to look back on it fondly for sure.
Why did you think it was kind of time to come back? What were you feeling?
I don't know. It's just kind of, I've done the NBL before and it was more just like, I want to see if I can do that again.
Totally.
Like, you know, like a little bit of unknown, want to test myself a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And who are the other guys that you were playing with over in Big League? You were with Angus Brandt
Angus
as well,
Brandt,
you played
yeah.
with in Perth.
Obviously, Nick Kay is over there.
Yep.
Doing great.
Absolutely chopping
Andrew
it.
Ferguson as well, another Perth boy.
I met
over
Ferg
there.
As well when I was over yeah, there. He's a great fella.
Big Fergie. Yep. Yeah, he's doing well over there. It's a bit of an Aussie takeover at the moment.
Yeah, big time. Well, how we actually know each other, me and Rhys, so we go way back. So it goes back to junior basketball days where... I'll tell the story. This is how I remember Rhys. So it was probably like under 12. We were playing wobble. We were playing with Coburn. I was playing with Lakeside. I was never any good, but you know, you are always pretty good. But about under 12s, you were not the shape you were right now at all. This was not the shape that Rhys was. He was a little bit rounder.
Maybe rotund.
Yeah. A little bit wider, but nowhere near as tall. But then we come back the next season. We haven't seen you for 6 months. And all of a sudden, you're a foot taller and you just shot up like this. And then you know how, you know, regularly everybody kind of mellows out with the juniors. You just kept that same distance the whole time.
Yeah.
So, which is a little bit annoying. But
yeah,
then
I'm a front runner for sure.
Yeah. And then from that, we also then went to Willerton High School together for a short period of time, which you were a gun out. We'll go into that in a little bit. But before we go into all of your career and everything, we sort of got the word out. This was me and Dan as well to people that know you and said you're coming on the show to get a little bit of backstory and info from you. So
it's fun.
This is just a true or false one. Is this true that you were part of a gang in Perth? The Westview gang? Have you heard
true.
Of the Westview? You're true?
True?
Yeah, so that gang consists of Mitch Norton, Nick Kay.
It's an exclusive gang.
Yeah, exclusive gang. So in the gang, what I heard, let me know if this is true or not, The entire first season that you guys were living together in the Westview gang, you didn't cook yourself a single meal, and your mum would come on over and drop your little frozen meals over there. Is that true or false?
That's true.
That's true. That's good. True. Good, good.
But
good.
Who in their right mind would cook if someone can cook for
You're
you?
You're actually bang on there. When I heard that, I was like, oh, well, fair enough. I actually still live at home, and mum actually cooks me dinner most nights anyway. Yeah, so pretty good, eh? I'm in no position to be talking any shit about that. The other one I've also got, this is a photo that got sent in. I just want to see if you can recognize this man that's on the photo here. So, do you recognize this guy? I'm going to show the camera. So, this is a face. I don't know if the camera can get right in there. We'll put it up otherwise. But
did Damian Martin give that to you?
That was... who was that one that gave us? Chance, yeah. Jacob Chance. So, pretty much, it's you're missing a tooth by the looks. You've got some swelling over the nose. You want to tell us what happened? Apparently, there's a story behind it.
I think we're going to move on from this one.
No, I want to know. All right.
It's a long story. All right. So, it starts off pre-season, right? You try and, like, sort of get out of the basketball grind and do something a bit different. So, Trev thought it would be a good idea for us to do a Navy Day.
Nice.
So, I think we go out to Garden Island.
You go on the ships and stuff.
Yeah, so we took a little boat over to Garden Island, and we're having a great time, like doing all this team building stuff, like putting out fires, like stopping floods, like doing all these like dragging boats along the soft sand, which is tough. And it was honestly one of the most difficult things I've ever done. So like we get to the end of the day, accomplished everything, like everything great. No one's injured, no one's hurt, and we just like finish everything so early. So like, well, can we do a tour of like one of the naval ships, right? So this is all like not planned, just have a good time.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's like, yeah, go for sure. So we're like going through these ships, and immediately I realized like, all right, these ceilings aren't very high. These aren't built for 6'9" basketball
players.
They didn't
think there was going to be the Perth Wildcatchers coming in and out of the boats.
No,
yeah, fam.
No. And they were packing it all up because they just come back from somewhere. And so we're going through the boat. I'm like weary of this, like weary, like all like going ducking under everything. And we get to the end of the tour, but there's a big long ladder that goes up to the top. And we're like, can we go up there and like have a look from the top? And like, yeah, go for it. So then.
So you're climbing up the ladder.
So I'm going first or second. So Derek Cook Jr., I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, him, I remember. Yeah, man.
Goes first. And he's like, hey, Reese, like how many steps you reckon you can do this in? And I was like, more than you, or less than you. So he goes up. 4 steps straight to the top. I'm like, all right, I'll do
He's
it.
He's an athlete as well, like yeah. Straight up there.
Big yep. dog, right? So I'm like, I'll do it in 3. So so I go, maybe covered like six steps, 1, 2, bang, straight 3 steps, cook him. And I look up at the last second and there's an overhanging bar on top of the ladder. And as I look up, it's too late. I'm powering through this last step.
That third step
just
is already
straight up. Smack bang right on my nose, but it goes down, smacks my tooth, like, and it just drops. I just like turn around, look down, and see this tooth just dropping to the bottom of the boat.
Yeah,
that's just like that.
And your front tooth as well.
Yeah,
that's so. Gone. Is it? What do you have to do? Did you get it replaced?
Yeah, I got it replaced. So, but so that's not where the funny part of the story. That's obviously
that's
funny.
Full on. That sucks.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But then Adam Ford and Matt Nielsen are down the bottom. Coaches, our two yeah. assistant coaches, and the tooth just bounces, and I'm like catch it, like yelling at him, and they're like
yeah,
catch, what? They're like catch what, and then the tooth just drops, bounces, and falls into the water
no.
next to the boat. So I'm like, all right, the water's not that deep, like we should be right. So we're all just looking in the water over the edge, and I'm like, all right, can one of you guys go get it? And then out of nowhere, out of the abyss. This fish swims up.
Joking.
No, whatever. Like, this fish swims up from the bottom of the ocean, like, and swallows it
no.
and swims away. And we're all just like, what
no.
the fuck just
so
happened?
Fish,
like, honestly, like, what just happened?
Some sea monster from the bottom of the jetty has
so
come
then,
up
like,
and
someone,
holy
some
fuck.
Lucky bastard has got some fish and chips from from Rocco and has got my tooth in it. So,
oh
yeah.
My God, that is all time. Wow, so there's a fish somewhere in Coburn Sound there that's swimming around with one of your teeth in it.
Yeah.
That's wild. Fuck me. Yeah. Wow, great story. That Thanks. Was good. I'm glad that we got that sent in. Thank you very much, Jacob. That was great. So what'd you have to do to get it replaced? You get just another one in?
So I had like a partial, and then I got a full one put in later. So yeah. So we're good now.
You couldn't even tell now, just letting you know.
Appreciate it.
Well, that was awesome. Well, before we're going to get into all of your career stuff now, Reece. So I want to paint a little bit of a picture about your achievements and accomplishments so far with playing for all the teams all around the world that you've been at. So let's sort of go right back to the start of your basketball journey, you growing up. So how did you first get into basketball? And was there somebody that, you know, inspired you to do it? Did you have an older brother or someone else?
I first got into basketball watching my older brother play at Leeming Rec Center.
Good.
On like Saturday mornings.
Have you been down to Leeming Rec lately? It's no good.
Not in the last year.
Probably the same rings as
Yeah, probably. But no, so I watched him play and I was playing footy at the time. I was footy crazy at that point. Yeah. So I wasn't too big a fan of basketball, but like, I don't know, like if you don't have any older siblings, but like watching him do it, I was like, all right, I want to be better than him. I want to play basketball. So then I went down to Coburn and just entered in like the mini ball comp when I was about 7. So then that's when I first started playing basketball.
There you go. Yeah. And then were you always playing with your brother? You out in the courts, playing one-on-one?
Yeah. He's 4 years older than me, so he was a bit bigger than me at that point.
Honestly, everyone that ends up being a professional athlete has someone that beats them down as a kid. Oh, I swear. It's actually just like a thing.
Yeah. I caught up pretty quick because I was a fat little bastard, but it was definitely.
Is he as tall as you?
He's about 6'5".
Yeah, okay, nice. Did he end up doing basketball all the way
no,
through?
No, he's not a basketball player. No, I'm the only one in the family. That's
you beat
a
him
player.
Down after that.
Yeah, so, exactly. You know, yeah, he's just defeated. That.
And then when you went to, so obviously we know each other from being at Willerton High School. So you went to Willerton, part of the basketball program there. The memory that I've got of the one time that I played you ever, you probably wouldn't even remember this, but it was. We got matched up. Why I was matched up with you for one session was just ridiculous. Anyway, it was first to 11, just one-on-one. Yep, cool. We had Mr. Forsyth, who was like the teacher, coach, the main guy running the program. He was watching us the whole time. I'm like, don't watch this. This is going to be trash. Comes out, Reece beats me 11-0. Dude, I'm getting blocked. I'm going, well, this is fucking terrible. You're laughing away, having a great time. But how was your time at Willerton?
Yeah, you quit basketball after that.
I literally quit basketball after. I don't think I played since. So thanks for that.
No, Willerton was awesome. I was, obviously, I knew Forsy from Coburn days, so he was the one that got me down there to try out. And
great guy.
Yeah, awesome dude. And so I really enjoyed my time there. Got to go to a school nationals, like just the fact I was training twice or like two mornings every week and had games, like just added on to already my wobble commitments and state commitments and stuff. Like I think that just taught me a bit of work ethic, from an early age, which I think is really important.
Most definitely. Well, I mean, like from, again, my memory from you at school for the time that we were playing, you were always doing so much extra stuff. Like, you know, you were first one shooting, your last one shooting. Like you said, you were doing your wobble training, plus you were doing all the stuff at school. You didn't miss any of them. It was just, you know, so much volume, which we'll go into later on a little bit more about like your physical training and sort of what you've been doing the last few years to get where you are. But from that, you then got a invite, or did you go try out for the Perth Wildcats to be part of a development squad? How did that come about?
Yeah, so briefly before that, I was at touring the Institute of Sport, they were considering offering me a scholarship then. But then around the same time, I get an email from Adam Ford at the Wildcats just saying development player trials are opening up. Like, if you'd like to come down, because I went down the year before that and didn't get.
And how old were you at this point? 17?
17, turning 18. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So, so then I went down, got through the first set of cuts and then kept training with the Cats. And then there were two more cuts after that and managed to survive those. And then I think maybe a quarter of the way through the season became a development player for that year.
Unreal. And again, another memory of us, I remember sitting in the same row, the same member seats, row F with you for multiple seasons as we're growing up.
Challenge Stadium, man.
Like, and then you've gone from sitting in the stands to playing for the Wildcats
sitting in the stands to sitting on the bench.
I was pretty jealous. But so when you started with the Cats as a development player, the coach was Trevor Gleeson. How was that?
Trev's one of the best coaches going around in Australian basketball. Like, so you will, like, he demands the best of you, and if he doesn't get it out of you, you're not going to play. Tough man for sure. But looking back on it now, I think it was super important to my growth and development having Trev there.
Absolutely. And, I mean, you played with so many great big names at the Wildcats, Damian Martin, Greg Heyer, Bryce Cotton. List goes on for, you know, how successful that you guys were in that period where you won four championships. Is there one championship that, like, really stands out for a year that, you know, you really found that you developed lots and you improved your skills? And also, tell us a little bit about your teammates that were part of those championships as well.
Yeah, I think the one that stands out for me the most was the one that we won in Melbourne. It was my first year as a contracted player after 4 years of being DP. We ended up going to Melbourne and winning it in their gym, which was an unreal feeling. Had everyone's family around there too, so it was sick. Like, the only bad part is we had to fly straight back after the game.
Is this the one that you end up doing, like, your celebrations or something in some cricket club or something
like that?
Yes,
that's the one.
Greg was telling me about that.
So we win in Melbourne, like, vibes are high. We're having a great time, and then a reality check hits us. We have a flight in, like, an hour and a half. I'm like, oh, shit, all right. So then we get back. Everyone goes home. Some people shower, some people don't. And we end up at a cricket club in the middle of nowhere.
Awesome.
Just, yeah.
And you're the NBL champions in some random cricket club.
Yes, with, like, just the team, which
half
was
not
kind
showered.
Of fitting. Like, yeah, half of us not shower, but it was kind of fitting that it was just, we're just around the guys and the family and stuff like that, which is really cool. We celebrated more after that, but yeah, it was really cool to share that with them.
Absolutely. And then your teammates, has there been some that have been, like, really influential for your development, people that have sort of taken you under their wing a little bit in terms of your progress and growth?
I mean, like, living with Nordo and Nick was huge because they've been around the block. They know what they're doing. They're relentless workers. So seeing that, they didn't really take me under the wing per se, but being around them and just seeing sort of what it takes to be a true pro was cool. When we're talking about legitimate people, it took me under their wing and sort of treated me as their rookie a little bit. Probably Jesse was a big one for me. Greg as well with the leadership sort of stuff. But Jesse and I are similar positions. We play sort of the same way. So he was always in my ear about stuff. And Sean Redditch too, to be honest. I was more early days of my career, but yeah, those three guys are huge.
And just massive names in NBL, all those guys that you just mentioned.
Yeah,
so, it's
all
pretty cool,
like,
to have
them. Four-time champions, like, yeah, it's unreal. Yeah.
So then after your time at Perth where you won four championships, which is unreal, you got more, almost one for every finger, how bloody good is that? You went on over to the B League in Japan. So why did you want to move to Japan? Was it for more opportunity? Or was there, surely you would have got, like, college offers as well throughout that time, no?
College was a bit earlier when I was being a DP. I kind of made that early choice when I was about 18 that I didn't want to go to college because I wasn't a huge academic.
Yep.
Like, I wasn't big on school, didn't enjoy going to school. So made that choice pretty easy early on.
I think they have people that do the schoolwork for you, though.
Yeah,
I think
if you're
good enough,
pay them enough, they'll do it for you. But I think it was definitely opportunity-based. It was the COVID year. I didn't play a whole lot that season, so the options were kind of slim. And my agent, who actually represents Paul Hanare too, who's now the Shimano head coach with Nick, was the coach of the team I played for. Ended up playing for. So it kind of worked out super well that he was looking for a guy in my position at the time. And Rogley, my agent, hits me up and he's like, I know you want to play in Australia, but, like, would you consider playing in Japan? And I hadn't given it much thought, but I was like, I was like, yeah, for sure. Like, let me know what they think, like, obviously what the offer is and all that, and then let's get the ball rolling.
That's awesome. And that's the cool thing about basketball is there's so many leagues and so much opportunity all around the world. So there's, you know, the Japanese league, there's stuff in Asia, there's stuff in Europe, you know, it's all over the place. There's all these leagues going on, which is pretty cool. So then you join up your team in Japan, which is the Kagawa. Five Arrows. What was that like, and what was the difference do you feel that you found with the NBL and going to the B League?
Yeah, Japan's got some rogue team names.
They
just do. Just
quietly. And they're sponsored by, like, all these random companies and stuff.
It was a great experience. Like, the first year there was a shock to the system.
Yeah.
Because I moved.
So different, eh?
Yeah. I go from living in, like, I've lived in Melbourne, Perth, to living in this small town in Japan that's like not even 300,000 people. Which in comparison to cities in Japan, you've been there, like, most of them have, like, upwards of 6-7 million people roaming around. So, like, to have very limited access to the food I'm used to eating, no family, no friends.
That was the thing
friends.
That like, got me just for, I was only there for a very short amount of time, obviously you were there for 3 years, but the food, like, oh my God, like there's only so much katsu everything that you can eat. You're like, fuck me, I need something that's not deep fried for a bit.
Yeah, I put on like 10 kilos early season. So, but nah, like the coffee as well, like it's tough to find good coffee out there. Especially
Starbucks everywhere, every 50 meters. Yeah.
Not going to get any Starbucks sponsorships after this pod, but not a fan. But yeah, no, it was definitely a reality check for sure. Like going from being like the most professional club in Australia or basketball-wise in Australia to there, like where they don't even have a training gym that's yours. You're sharing it with like old people playing table tennis.
Yeah.
Like it was, a reality check for sure.
It's just so different, isn't it?
Yeah. It just makes you realize how much you love basketball to be doing this. Like instead of doing what I was doing before.
Totally. And the imports that are over in Japan, there's a lot of guys that have either played in the NBL or have been imports for the NBL that are over there as well, which was like really interesting to see. So like the guys that I saw when Nick was playing, John Mooney was on the other team, Vic Law. There was another guy from that was an Australian. Anyway, but there's just so many crossovers from the NBL to there. In terms of the actual like gameplay, what did you think is the biggest difference between NBL and the B League?
It's a lot more with imports. It's a lot more one-on-one focused. Like you have to be able to go out and get a bucket by yourself at times. Like you'll get to late shot clock and someone's just going to throw you the ball and be like, here, good luck. And be like, all right. So that took a bit of getting used to. I have to sort of expand your game a little bit in that area. There's a lot more like fast pace shots getting up that would be considered questionable out here. Defense isn't a real big focus a lot of the time too with some teams that just try and outscore teams. But all in all, the competition's actually really good over there.
Oh, it's really strong. Yeah. Like I said, there's so many crossovers with the players. So it's...
But like also like every league in the world plays a different style of basketball. Japan's got their style. You see it on their national team. Like European countries have their style and Australia's got its own style too. So it's just, there's just something. It's not bad, it's just different.
Yeah, totally. And then the actual fans in Japan, I thought they were just amazing. Oh. So I don't know I'm sure it's probably the same for your team, but like Nick's team, when I went and watched a few of the games, they've got like a certain clapping sequence. So it's like, go, go, Magic.
Yeah,
they've got like, and that's all you can do. You're not allowed to yell. You can't stand up. You can't be like animated at the games as a supporter.
Yeah.
How did you find that? Was that like a bit different for you?
Yeah, I mean, I can't do a clapping sequence because it'd probably be a bit inappropriate.
Yeah.
Like it's weird. You see on the side, they've got all these like little posters. They've made like a teddy bear of you or something like that.
They've done like t-shirts of you, all sorts of stuff.
Insane. Like, I've gotten some weird gifts out there. But it's really cool. They get around it, regardless of whether you win or lose. They're just always
there.
That
is the thing that the next question I had for you was compared to like now coming back to the NBL in terms of the fans. I'm sure it was that even like a thought process that obviously the NBL, you look at like a Facebook post, you look at the the papers, whatever. You have one bad game and everyone's on you.
Yeah.
Versus over in Japan, when you look on the same pages, everybody is so positive. You know, you brought honor to us today, even though you lost by 30 points.
It's like you fought really hard.
It's so positive, and it's like such a contrast to like what like Western sport is. I guess.
Like it's so positive. I think there's a catch coming. Like, I was like, what are you going to say next?
Yeah, then, exactly.
Like,
it is.
Like, no, I didn't think about that too much, but I'm sure I'm going to get some interesting messages for sure.
That's right. There'll be the Japanese ones in the comment section as well, just buffering.
They'll be backing up for me, like, it's like, how dare you? Like, but yeah, no, like, for sure. I didn't give it too much of a thought, but it's, now thinking about it, it's definitely going to be a bit different.
Yeah, most definitely. And then from being in Japan, doing the B League, this opportunity has come up to come back to Australia and be part of the NBL with South East Melbourne.
Yeah.
How did that all come about? And how did you come to that decision? And are you excited to get there?
Yeah, it came about by towards the end of my season, just had a couple conversations with then the CEO, Tommy Greer. Nothing really, just seeing how I was doing, like nothing crazy. And then once the season finished in Japan, it was Mike Kelly had been appointed the head coach and he called me and just to see where I was at, what I was doing. And I'd been lucky enough to do some stuff on the Boomers with him, so I've had a bit to do with him. And next thing came to it, I got offered a pretty decent deal, like 2-year deal in Southeast, and it was hard to turn down. So that's how that came about. But I'm really looking forward to it. Like I said, like I really like Mike as a coach. I think
it's good that you've worked with him previously as well. I've only heard really good things from everybody about Mike Kelly as well.
Yeah, yeah. Like he's a really nice guy, but once he gets down to business, he's a businessman. Like he goes to work, like, which is what I really respect about him. I think another exciting part is the squad they've got there. I think the squad Southeast can really make some noise this year. They've been so close the last 2 years.
They have been. They've just been on just on the verge of the four. Yeah,
for sure. So after we get these next two imports squared away and another local, I think it's going to be
Reece Vaid just draining threes the whole time. You'll be absolutely laughing.
Just got to do my best.
Yeah, yeah.
And was there anything, all right, this is a little bit off the wall, but was there any reason for you coming back because the lady situation in Japan? Obviously, it's very different, very different. Reece is a single man.
You're going to get me in trouble here. I mean, I'd be lying if I said it didn't play a little factor, for sure.
Well, he's an absolute stud. He's got to come back here because it's so different. Like, you don't just, like, go out partying.
And, I had some fun in Japan, for sure. But, like, the first year was an adjustment period, we'll say that. A different word for it, but there's an adjustment period. But
nice, good answer. Yeah. We'll leave it there. That's good. All the single ladies out there, hit Reece up. You've been part. He's desperate. He's coming all the way back from Japan for that. So you've been part of the Boomers squad as well. What's the Boomers like to play for? Because again, you only hear such great things about everybody that's been part of the Boomers camps and squads. What's it like to be part of a team?
Best basketball experience I've ever had in my life, and that'll hold true with whatever I do next. Like, it's gonna, like, it's just unbelievable being in that around, in and around that culture. Like, words can't really describe, but
so what makes it so good,
mate? You just have to be there to understand.
You, like, just gotta do it. Well, I'm never gonna be there, Reece. All right, I'm sorry,
it's hard. I can kind of, like,
you're the closest I'm gonna get,
literally. Like, oh, you got Nick Kagan being an Olympian and stuff, mate. Don't even start. Like, the mateship about it. Like, you go play in professional leagues and you can be as close to those guys as you want. There's always a business side about it where you're here to support your family, you're here to put food on the table, you're here to buy nice things with your money. Like, it's so money focused. Whereas you go to a Boomers camp or a Boomers window and play for them, everyone is just about playing for the next guy. Like, everyone is just about how to get this team a win, how to represent your country the right way. And that is so rare in today's basketball, like, because you can be as good a bloke as you want. It's always going to come down to dollars and cents. Like, it's always. It has to, because you need to make them. That's what we do it for, to make a living. But once you get to that sort of system, it separates it. Like, it's not about the money anymore. You're doing it for the love of the game, for the love of your country, for the love of the mate next year. Like, that's as well as I can put it. Like, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Hey, legends, how you doing? Quick little break in the podcast here. Just a reminder, it'll take you 20 seconds of your time and be doing me a massive favor. If you wouldn't mind following or subscribing on YouTube, Apple Music, or Spotify, wherever you're streaming, it would be great. Really goes a long way into getting great guests like Reece that's sitting next to me right now, and all the other guests that I've had on the podcast continuing to come back. And it just takes 20 seconds of your time. I'd owe you two favors. You can ask what those favors are later, and I really appreciate it. Back to the pod. Here we go. So what I've always admired about watching your journey, Reece, and seeing you even from a junior age, is how you've obviously been really talented, but of how hard of a worker that you are as well. So I'd love to deep dive into that a little bit and talk about how you've made the most of all the opportunities in your career thus far in terms of everything performance. So everything to do with your physical, your diet, your mentality, recovery, all that sort of stuff, and your skills as well. That would be great to hear. So let's kind of start off with the physical and diet side of things. So when you first signed up to the Wildcats as a DP, what was the goal in terms of physically? Were you trying to change your body? Were you trying to put on some size? And how did you do that?
The goal, I came into my first year as a DP a bit overweight, actually. Like, yep. I was probably about like 110. And skin folds are a bit higher. Mm. So the goal was to sort of drop some weight, but without losing any strength and by gaining a bit of quickness too, because I was a little bit slow. I was playing a bit more the five than the four at that stage, and that wasn't going to be my position for the future. So I had a meeting with like nutritionists for the club and worked with Josh Kavanagh, who's the strength coach there, who's amazing at his job. and we just pretty much laid out a plan for me for the whole season to see where, like, to sort of plan out where I needed to be at each different interval, like month by month by month. So I had like weight targets to hit. I had because I wasn't playing a whole lot, I had like 4 to 5 gym sessions a week,
yep,
extra cardio sessions on top of that. And obviously with the nutritionist, getting my diet in check, because I was 18, I was living at home, like I was just eating what was put in front of me. So
whatever mum was dropping over.
Yeah, exactly. So it was just sort of growing up a little bit in that sense and realizing that I had to be more accountable for my body.
Definitely, yeah. And then in that period as well, you touched on it then that because you're a development player, for anyone that maybe doesn't know what that is, it's sort of like at the end of the games, if you're up or down a little bit, you might get a little bit of court time. So you're not exactly playing a lot of minutes. So what were you doing extra in those sessions to sort of compensate for you maybe not playing as much on the game days?
Yeah, so like we always say with DPs, training's not over when it's finished. Like for you, you have to get out after for an extra probably 30 to an hour, like, and do another session, because you might be standing on the sideline for pretty much all of practice. So you can go like all of practice, stand on the sidelines thinking you've had a good session and that's it and get nothing out of it, or you can go and get your own work like after that, and coaches are always there to help you out. So it was definitely like extra sessions after practice, even shooting on the court, like at RAC after games and stuff like that.
Did you shoot after the games too?
Yeah. When they were packing down, we were allowed to go out and do some sessions out there. We'd come in, do an extra session at shoot around if you weren't suiting up. Like, it was just all about the extras, because if you're in that sort of 12th, 13th, 14th man role, you have to kind of separate yourself by doing more work. Otherwise, you're just going to be stuck in that.
Well, another thing I can remember as well is after watching a Wildcats game, say that was on like a Friday night or a Saturday, I'd go down to Revo Fitness that I was training at and be there as well. Yep. We'd do sessions together. Like, we're just coincidentally there the same time. And you've played the night before and we were
killing
doing
me on the air. But
yeah, man, I was vomiting after some of those sessions. They
I've got a video on my phone still.
You might actually have to send me that.
Yeah, I was cooked. Like, I'm cut out for basketball fitness, but not
it's a different thing. Yep, totally. But so you touched on that all about your performance and what you were working on. The other thing that you've sort of changed physically as well, very progressively over the years, is how much muscle that you've got on you now. Mm. Have you been following anything in terms of like a weights program or a strength program the last few years? Or
So consistently, I'll be following a strength program year round. Like,
do they do as much of that in Japan or not as much?
They do, but it's different. Yeah. I wasn't really vibing with it too much, so I was getting programs from Australia sent over and doing my own thing that way. So, it's like I'm a creature of habit when it comes to that. Like, I've got my routine that I've probably done for 6-7 years now, like, or maybe 8 even, that I consistently do, and I find that it works for me. And it's just all about sort of trial and error too. As something starts to feel a little bit off, tweaking a little bit, and just sort of figuring out how to keep the body happy.
And what does that actually look like for you in the gym? Are you focusing on like power training stuff? Are you focusing more on strength? Are you doing more like band resistance?
Like phases, like 4 week sort of phases. Like at the moment, I'm in I'm off season mode, so I'm in my strength phase at the moment. So. But
just lifting heavy, clanging and banging.
Exactly. Yeah. Clanging and banging for sure. But definitely throwing power is super important. Obviously, you have to stay explosive. Endurance a little bit less when it comes to basketball because it's more quick up and down, not continuous running. But it's always good to have your lungs behind you. But yeah, definitely at the moment, definitely in a strength phase.
Yeah, great. And then when you're in Japan, you mentioned a little bit before, obviously the food and the diet is very, very different of what you can just sort of even go into the supermarkets and just get and cook. How did you go when you're away? What were you doing with your food?
I became a bit of a chef over there.
Did you?
I'm nice with
good.
It
good. Your mum will be so happy. That's so good.
No, she'll be upset. She can't cook anymore. But
what were you cooking?
You name it, mate. I got you. Really? No, I'm kidding. The thing about Japan too, I'm sure you noticed, there's no breakfast culture there.
No, we're you can't even get eggs people. Or anything. Yeah.
No, we're big breakfast people over here. Probably have the best brekkie culture in the world. I agree. Go over there, missing my smashed avo, my eggs benny and all that. Like, so I had to adjust to that, having rice in the morning and all that.
So
jazz.
Weird, eh? Like, I was having sushi for breakfast. Yeah. I'm like, this is not it.
No. So you almost have to stay like, or you actually have to stay a lot more on top of what you're eating over there, because everything is fried or cooked in some
oils,
God
and
knows
stuff.
What.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Delicious.
That's great.
But not great for
you
your stomach
it for
when
a week
you're running
you're
around.
Like, just give me a break. I just need something that's just been grilled on a pan.
Especially back to back, like 2 40-minute games on a weekend, you eat ramen at night, you're going to be slushing around your stomach the next day. You definitely have to be on top of it.
And then in terms of like your skills, you've always been a great three-point shooter. That's been like one of the big assets of your game. Is there anything that you do week on week or when you're training or extras or anything like that in particular to make sure that you're just continuing to perfect that craft as best that you can?
It's about all about reps. Like, you do something enough, you're gonna be pretty good at it, right?
So like, what sort of reps do you do when What's a session look like?
Yeah, so I'll walk you through today's session. So today's session was pretty chill because I'm just getting back into the swing of things after a couple of weeks off. So it just starts with like 50 touch shots around the hoop, then you go around, do 50 mid-range jumpers, and then 50 more off the dribble, and then get into some movement like threes just to get the feet under you. That'll be another probably 50 reps at a time. It's all in 50 like rep increments, so 10 each spot. Five spots.
So you're doing like 400 or 500 reps.
Yeah, easy. Like pretty much most days. I have a day or two off here and there, but easily 400 or 500 reps a day.
That's huge.
Not reps. Yeah,
and then in terms of stuff that you were wanting to improve yourself for the time that you're in Japan, was there anything that you were going, yep, this is what I really want to work on with the more opportunity that I'm given over there?
Yeah, definitely ball handling. I found that over there I had the ball in my hands a lot more, and it's not something I'm really used to. I'm used to setting screens for Bryce Cotton and popping in, being like, do you want to give me the ball? Nah, cool.
Like, I'll just go then.
a bit of Jackie Moon about it. It's like, only if you want it. But adjusting to actually having to come off and be relied upon to score. So like, can't just score one way, you have to score multiple ways. I'm sure like Nick can attest to this playing in Japan too. Like, your game has to change a little bit. You have to adjust.
Yep.
And I'm probably going to have to adjust again coming back here. It's going to be different. But I definitely had to round out my game more offensively.
And then with Southeast, when you've been chatting with them about joining the team just now, what's your role looking like? And is there anything that you're looking to really improve for this, you know, off-season coming up and season, first season with them?
I mean, obviously, I'm playing with Mitch Creek, who's one of the best four men in the comp, if not the best. So it's just like... sort of just working around him, see what he brings, and then see what I can do to facilitate that. I think the role I'm probably going to have is similar to the role I had when I did the Boomers stuff, like come off the bench and have an immediate impact offensively, be a disruptor defensively. Those are the two big things. I haven't had too much of a chat, probably going to have a couple more chats later in the week about it, just to really get the rundown of what they expect and what they want me to work on while I'm out here. But early days is that's the indication.
Definitely. And then in terms of your mindset and mentality with the experience of everything that you've done with the Wildcats, championship player, then going over to Japan, getting more minutes, how has that sort of changed from when you've started the Wildcats as a development player to now, in terms of how you're approaching the game and your confidence and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's less being less result focused and stuff like that, which is funnily enough, like stressing less about stuff, not as worried, like not thinking all day about game day, like getting amped up too early, just sort of being in the moment more than that. Yeah, just rolling into it. It's just basketball at the end of the day. Like, I find I play better when I'm less worried about stuff. Like, it's funny, like, you think it'd be the other way around. You're constantly thinking about it. You'll be focused on every single thing. You think you'd probably play better, but it's not the case. Like, you're too stressed. You're going to be all tight and all that. Just playing freely and really getting out your head has been huge for me.
So, like, game day, what's it look like for you leading up to the game? How do you get there really early, and what sort of shots you're putting up? And
game day, like, for me, like, generally if we have shoot around, I won't do much shooting in the morning. I'll probably get to shoot around and just do like a massive like 30-minute stretch after we get through the offense and defenses of the other team in scout. But then I'll go back home, have a meal, maybe have a nap, maybe not. I'm not too structured on game days, to be fair. But then I'll get to the game 2.5 hours early usually, get up, my usual shots and my usual mobility work, and then a bit of a stretch, and then maybe come out for the team warm up, and then I'm ready to go. Like, yeah, it's nothing too crazy.
So then, looking back on everything that you've achieved in your career thus far, and there's going to be so much more still. 17-year-old Reece is about to, you know, be a development player with the Wildcats. What advice are you giving to yourself way back when? If you could just change one thing that you just did a little, we don't regret anything, but if we could just change something to do it in a bit of a different way, what's the one thing that you think, gee, I wish I knew that earlier?
I'm a back 17-year-old Reece. I'm like, he did it. No, I'm kidding. I would just say stress less. Like, honestly, as cliche as it sounds, like, young Reece was really worried about a lot of things, worried what people thought about him. Like you said before, fans' perception and all that, he was stressed like all the time and probably wasn't a good guy to be around a lot of the time because of that. So, yeah, that'd be the one piece of advice. Did a good job to get me to this point, 17-year-old Reece.
Absolutely. But, he's done a great job.
But, yeah, that'd be a big one for me.
That's awesome, man. Well, I'm so keen to see everything that you have going on this year with Southeast Melbourne. Is there anything that you're working on in particular this year that you go, this is the goal for me?
Championship. Southeast Melbourne Championship. That's, yeah, baby. That's a big one.
I love it. Well, mate, thanks for coming on down. It's been so good to chat. I can't wait to see you out there in the green and the black and mate, white. Green, black, white?
White, green, black, white. Green, black, I can't white. Wait to see you up there, IC Arena.
Look up. You know my seats. You know jersey, where the seats yeah, are. Row nice F, give me a wave. Thanks, mate. Too good.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That episode from Backchat Studios lives on the Acast Creator Network. If you want to sign up as a patron or access all of our merch, head to backchatpodcast.com.au.